And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. We take you up till the top of the hour. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to continue to preview the NFL draft. We're going to focus on USC prospects. That'll be at the bottom of the hour, as we will hear from one of their local reporters to get the gist of who is going to come out of that program. In the meantime, let's hit on some of the biggest storylines revolving around the Giants as well as the NFL. And, Paul, late last week, we did not have a program on Friday. It was revealed that Jonathan Hankins has officially signed with the Indianapolis Colts. So that means that there is now an opportunity at the starting defensive tackle spot next to Damon Snacks Harrison for a number of players to compete. And I think the two that come to the forefront is Jay Bromley and Robert Thomas.
Sure.
Because those two have experience. They understand the scheme. Now, that doesn't mean that the Giants are not going to add perhaps a young prospect in the draft, but I think those two guys in particular are the ones that come to mind.
I don't think there's any question that Jay Bromley has to look at this. Now, really in his fourth year, although he's missed so much time due to injury, you could call it his third. But this is a guy who must seize the moment because there's no time like the present for him. I do believe he's now a show-me player and needs to prove not only that he belongs on the team with his performance during the training camp and the preseason, but that he deserves to be involved in the rotation to get legitimate snaps. I think that to this point, his production has not matched his draft status due to injuries and quite frankly also being blocked by superior players. I understand
chart.
That.
Yeah.
But now it's time. You know, now they need you. It's time. And as far as Robert Thomas, look, the guy had bounced around a little bit for a few years in the league, and when the Giants picked him up last year, it was very quietly said, hey, we think he's a pretty big, strong player who can plug the run, and you know, he doesn't get a lot of publicity or anything like that, but quietly, we think he does a lot of dirty work, and he can help us. Well, unfortunately, he came down with an illness, and he missed virtually the whole season. So I don't know what he brings to the table other than the fact that the Giants were quietly optimistic when they signed him that he could help them. Look, if I'm the Giants, I said this before Jonathan Hankins signed with the Colts, I'm going to say it to you right now. I think you got to look at drafting a defensive tackle somewhere in the first four rounds.
Well, they only have essentially two on the roster. So it does make sense from a depth chart perspective to add somebody else in the mix. But I agree. I think it's show me time for both players in particular. And, you know, this is a motivational tool right now because if you're Jay Bromley and Robert Thomas and the players are going to return to work out this week, I mean, the writing is on the wall. You know now, Hankins is no longer a member of this team. I can make a significant statement and prove to the coaching staff that I should be in the front seat come training camp. To have that starting job. So both of them should look at it that way. I mean, Bromley, you're talking about a player who has had a few years of experience, but now there's an opportunity for him to get more reps. We talked about Robert Thomas. He was with the Carolina Panthers, so he also has some experience. And the benefit for either one of them, Paul, is the fact that they're going to be lining up next to Damon Snacks Harrison. And I think that that takes pressure off of any defensive tackle that has the luxury to play next to him, as well as having JPP and Olivier Vernon. So the good news, I think, through the lens of both of those players is neither one of them have to feel as if, yes, you have to fill the shoes of Jonathan Hankins, but you don't have to do the heavy lifting on this defensive line. And I think that that's a luxury for any player, whether you be an established veteran or a young player, to know, hey, I have an opportunity to solidify a starting job, but I don't need to overdo it because I know that I can rely on the guys around me.
Well, what it comes down to is you can afford to be the fourth member of the band.
Pretty much.
Yeah. You know, I will say this. There are still a few veteran free agent linemen available out there. I know on the web there have been some rumors about different guys who, you know, supposedly have had some type of contact or interest with the Giants. I'm not going to say anything about that because, quite frankly, I don't think they're going to do anything before the draft. I think it's highly unlikely they bring in a player now.
Well, especially since you're going to have plenty of options in the draft, too.
That's my point.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to see how things sort themselves out when the smoke clears the week after. And I think a lot of teams are in the same boat right now. They're going to wait till after the draft in another week or so, 2 weeks, and say, okay, this is where we stand. Now, is there anybody else here who can plug a couple of holes for us? And that's where something may happen. You know, does it come down to them signing a street free agent? Maybe it does. But I'll say this. With JPP, Snacks and Vernon, I am totally on board with what you said, in that the guy is not going to have to necessarily be a significant player. He just has to hold his own. That's all. Hold your own. Do a solid job. Don't get noticed. Don't screw up. Just go in there and quietly be efficient and take care of business. You don't have to go out and get 7-8 sacks. You don't have to make 70 tackles. Yeah. You don't have to make 20 tackles for a loss. No, you don't have to do any of that. Just go in there and hold the fort. Don't be a hole in the dam. That's all.
Now, from a track record standpoint, Paul, the other thing that I wanted to bring up with respect to Jonathan Hankins moving on is, you know, this falls in line at what we've seen with the Giants at this position previously.
Oh, no question.
Barry Cofield, he left via free agency, joined the Redskins.
Cornelius Griffin way back when,
if
before
you want
that.
Even to go further back, but at least in terms of recent history, guys that have followed one another, Cofield left to go to Washington. Hankins was drafted, replaced him. So, you know, you look at, Linville Joseph replaced
right.
Barry
yes.
Cofield. Then Joseph left to go to Minnesota, and then Jonathan Hankins replaced him. Now, whether or not Bromley and Thomas continue that trend of an internal young candidate replacing them or maybe somebody in the draft, they have leaned on having young guys take advantage of their opportunities. That's at least what we've seen in recent history.
That is true. Now, the difference being, though, that now – much more so than any of the other times when these defensive tackles left the Giants facility, you're talking about a team that relies much more on the sub package. And there are many, many snaps a game now, not just a few, but many snaps a game where they'll slide one of those defensive ends down into the defensive tackle spot. So whoever the defensive tackle is who wins that job, chances are he's not going to get a ton of snaps. He'll get his share. But even as the number one guy, he's not playing most of the game.
Especially on passing downs.
Right.
Which is what
That's
you're alluding
my point.
To.
The sub-package.
Be there for the run stopper, but then they may move in a more versatile type of player on third down.
That's the way the game has evolved.
Yeah. It'll be something interesting to watch as spring workouts begin for the Giants a little bit later on this week. Well, for those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, focusing on the biggest storyline connected to the Giants right now, which is trying to fill the void left behind by Jonathan Hankins, who signed with the Indianapolis Colts. So that will be a position battle to watch here in the spring leading into training camp. And with the draft on the horizon, perhaps this changes the mindset, Paul, as you mentioned. Not necessarily where they want to go in the first round, but the emphasis that they need to walk away with somebody that they can at least plug in that position to see if he could be a young prospect that could fit well into this game.
Well, I think the mission statement has to be, we need to find somebody who can legitimately compete at the spot. They don't necessarily have to draft a guy first or second round who's automatically going to be the plug-and-play starter. That would be, in my opinion, not necessary. I think it's simply got to be a guy who they believe has at least more than a reasonable chance of competing and potentially beating out the guys that are currently on the roster. And you can get that kind of player in the fourth round, let's say. You don't have to draft him that high.
But what you brought up in terms of the sub package, which I think is very interesting, is there maybe more value in perhaps finding that player that can be inside and outside, Paul? And then maybe you can develop them to become an every down player. And the reason why I'm throwing that out is one of the players that we've talked about, and not saying that this guy is on the Giants' radar, but Malik McDowell, for example, out of Michigan State, he has experience mm-hmm. as a defensive tackle on the inside, and they've also lined him up on the outside.
Yes.
So my point is that player may fit well to fill the void left behind by Hankins, based on what you're saying, since maybe they're only going to play that player on first and second down to begin with, well, why not bring in a guy that now you can utilize first, second, and third down?
Well, see, for me, Malik McDowell is more of a penetrator than a plugger. So to be honest with you, even though he's got to develop more pass-rushing moves when he gets to the NFL, this is a guy who does slice the gaps very well. And look, I think there's value with him at 23. If the Giants took him, I could absolutely understand the logic in taking a player like that. He would be a virtual plug-and-play player, which is what you want in the first round. So that'd be okay. But I would say something like this. A guy like Wormley out of Michigan, okay, who could be a fourth-round, even a fifth-round choice, to me, now he's going to need to bulk himself up a little bit, add to that frame, add a little strength. but he's a real blue-collar worker, and he's the kind of guy who I think when you talk about getting value, you talk about maybe getting him in the fourth or fifth round to play 25 snaps for you. I'd rather do that and use my first-round pick on something else, somebody who's going to play
every
potentially
down,
a lot more downs
yeah.
and make more of an impact than the guy who I'm drafting to be the fourth member of my four-man band.
That's understandable. In terms of the role, that's what you have to look at. You have to look at, you know, what you're going to ask that player to do within the framework of the defense. Now, with Hankins, remember, his second year, Paul, he burst out with all those sacks, where
yes.
he had seven sacks. And then he was dealing with injuries, the pectoral injury, and it dissipated in terms of the production. So that hasn't really even been a position where they've gotten consistent pressure.
No.
Is, I guess, the bigger point here. Now, Snacks had more sacks than he's ever had in a single season this year, but obviously the main point of bringing him was to help improve the run defense. So the player next to him is a guy that you want to complement in terms of stopping the run. Anything you get from a pass rushing standpoint, to me, is icing on the cake out of that player.
Well, you know, the one thing that the Giants want to be able to do, and we understand it because it's been the Spags method for years and years and years and years, and that's get most of your pass rush coming from a three-man defensive end rotation. Now, whether it's Okwara, whether it's Odighizuwa, whether it's somebody else they bring in to supplement JPP and Vernon, that's where the bulk of your pass rush is going to come from. We understand that. The two defensive tackles in the Giants scheme, you know, they don't necessarily have to provide much pass rush. What they need to do, here's what they need to do, besides stop the run, obviously, which the Giants got to be very good at last year because of Snacks. The one thing they've got to do on passing downs is just hold the front of the pocket. That's all. Hold the front of the pocket and maybe get some push. Maybe. Because there are some quarterbacks you don't want to push the front of the pocket. Then they get outside the pocket and then they're dangerous.
Everything breaks down, containment.
So there are times you don't even want that. You just want to tell your two defensive tackles, hold the fort. That's it. Just hold the fort. Don't get pushed back. Don't leave any lanes in the middle of the field. That's it. Hold your ground. Anchor. You know, to me, I don't know that you necessarily need to use a first-round draft pick to get one of those guys. That's just my philosophy. Again, that's not to say if Malik McDowell is there and the Giants take him, it's a bad pick. But you could understand the logic. There are many ways to go here.
Well, and if you look, Jonathan Hankins was a second-round pick. If you just look at where they've taken defensive tackles previously, and then Linval Joseph was also a second-round pick. So they went early, but they didn't necessarily use a first-rounder to try to add some more depth and other options on the defense.
But remember now, this guy, though, again, the fourth member of the four-man band, there were times when the Giants needed Hankins to be the first or second guy
because they didn't have nearly as many options on the line, of course. So that's why the rationale may be a little bit different if you go back 3 or 4 years as opposed to what they're thinking now, knowing Vernon,
exactly.
JPP, and Snacks are on
exactly.
the line already. It does change the philosophy. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to have a guest at the bottom of the hour as we focus on USC prospects. But in the meantime, want to try to squeeze in some calls, get to some tweets and so forth. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. He gets us started. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Well, Len. How's things with you?
Good. You know, it may be my fear of the unknown, which comes with getting older. But I think that the Hankins loss was a major loss. Paul, I think you're covering it up too simply about talking about getting guys in the fourth and the fifth. Now, if you could guarantee me that I could get Warmly in the fourth round, I'd feel a lot better. But well, Paul, he's not going to last to 55. I one of the questions I wanted to ask you would you, and I'm going to use the word reach, given the circumstances, would you guys reach a little bit for Warmly at 23? Paul, I don't think he lasts till the fourth round.
I don't know whose stuff you're looking at or whose stuff you're reading, but I would be absolutely shocked if he's not there at 55, and I don't even think you have to go there. I think to be honest with you, he's a projected guy. Here's the problem with Warmly. Warmly plays more of a plugger's defensive tackle role, but at 6'5", 298, he doesn't have the frame for that. He is not necessarily a great pass rusher or penetrator as much as he plays the game of a guy who is probably 25 pounds bigger than he is. which means he's now more of a projection than he is a plug-and-play player, which is why, to be honest, and yeah, fourth and fifth, I'm reaching here saying, I'm exaggerating. He's probably not a fourth or fifth rounder. He's probably more like a third, to be perfectly frank with you. But I'll give you a guy. You want a couple names a little bit more down further? You can look at Jahlil Johnson out of Iowa. Uh-huh. You could look at Carlos Watkins out of Clemson. Ryan Glasgow out of Michigan.
Yeah, that's another one to keep.
Look at those guys who would be probably third day picks. And you know what? Any one of those guys could come in and play 25 snaps and not hurt you.
Paul, suppose, and Lance, suppose you brought, I heard everything, so I'm changing the subject just a little bit. You and I disagree on Wormley. I think he's going to go a lot sooner than, even, he's going to go sooner than the third. I don't think he'll be there.
If he does, that's okay, though. If he does, it's okay. They don't have to get him.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. But I'm not excited about any of those scenarios. You know, I know the money appeared to be unreasonable, but I keep thinking about that money in the following terms. This time last year, did we feel we overpaid for Vernon? Did we feel we overpaid for Snacks Harrison?
Well, I think from a
I think we did.
Well, from a national side of things, I think a lot of people thought that the Giants really made huge splashes, but now look at what guys got this season.
Yeah,
then
right?
The contracts become reasonable. So you really can't base the contracts until you look at what the market becomes the following year. And it's the same thing even in the NBA, too. If you look at what NBA contracts went this offseason and then what they're going to go this coming offseason, it's also going to be a big disparity there.
Just remember one thing, Lynn. Last year, the Giants had about $60 million in cap room. And when they started signing all of these guys, they still had room. This year, the estimates are like right now, they got nine. Hankins got 10 a year, average-wise.
The
truth is, he got more than the room they actually have. It's a totally different equation.
You know, Paul, given what appears to, and Lance, what appears to be the goal, short-term, to get back to that Super Bowl within a 2 to 3 year time frame, you just lost a 25-year-old, three-year starter. Tell me what he was doing wrong. Now, other than the money, but you know what, Paul? Sometimes, given the goal, you just can't lose guys like that.
Len, how many games did he play? You call him a 3 year starter. Look at how many games he missed. Honestly,
I thought he played a lot, except for the pectoral muscle. I thought this was a guy who was on the field every Sunday doing what we wanted him to do. I mean, what you just described in terms of what you were getting out of the player, what you want out of a player at the three technique, he was giving us, Paul.
I happen to like Jonathan Hankins a lot. All right. He had in his 4 years with the Giants, he missed five, he missed seven, he missed 12 games. Okay? He missed 12 games in 4 years.
Okay.
That's a little much. But having said that, let me make something clear. I mean, I'm not doing revisionist history here. I'm a Jonathan Hankins fan. I like him. I think he is a good player. Okay?
Yes.
But here's my problem, Len. I'm not gonna talk about this guy as a good player and then say, oh, my God, now that he's gone, it's a disaster because he was a great player. No. He was a good player. A good player has walked out of the building. You can find good players.
Well, and Len.
Okay, I hope you're right. I hope we're finding Paul. I hope we're finding him within the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, Len. Let me ask you a question.
I know you've heard me say this before, guys. Look, I don't care about 2019, Paul.
Nor do I.
I want to win. I want to win in 2017. I'm not.
Len,
I mean,
so
the
they.
Window.
But Len, let me ask you this, Len, okay? Because you said that you were concerned about Hankins leaving because you think he's a good player. And I don't disagree with you, but I wanted to ask you, let's go back to 2013, because this is why I go back to track record. And whether this works out or not remains to be seen. We're going to have to wait and see how the 2017 season plays out. How confident were you that Jonathan Hankins was going to make up for the loss of Linville Joseph after seeing Hankins get 9 total tackles in 2013. How confident were you? What was the mindset? And I'm not saying that you maybe remember how you felt, but that's why I bring up track record. And I'm not saying that Jay Bromley and Robert Thomas are going to win the job and be the next Jonathan Hankins. That's not my point. The point is we've been through this before.
We've
seen it where Linville Joseph, a very strong player, leaves. Hankins, an unknown commodity who had 1 year under his belt with very limited reps, gets thrown into a starting job and then winds up getting seven sacks in 2014 in his first full year as a starter. So that's what they're banking on. They're banking on now developing a young guy, and with the support of Snacks, JPP, and Vernon, that maybe these numbers are not duplicated, but a guy that could be productive. That's the mindset, I think.
And let me answer your question directly. I was not very confident.
Okay.
I thought the loss of Joseph was going to be a very difficult thing to overcome. So I'll be honest with you. I liked Hankins too. I applauded the pick, but I was not quite as, you know, I was not that confident after we lost Linville. I have to admit that. The known to me is better than the unknown. I guess that's really where I'm coming from.
Understood.
We agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask you one other question?
Sure, real quick.
Okay. Having to do with, scheme-wise, moving people around, suppose we went for a guy. Would you go for Willis at 23, Paul and Lance? The pass rush specialist from Kansas State, at least pass rush specialist in his first year, and on third down move JPP inside?
Once again, you're talking about a tweener, Land, and my comments for him is that I said here, smart, motor, leverage, I liked all those things. I was disappointed in his inability to shed blocks, thought his frame was a little slight, and I did not think he showed a left of power. He goes 6'4", 255. I said even to myself, maybe if he's got some athleticism, he could be an outside linebacker for somebody in a 3-4 scheme. I don't think he's a good fit for the Giants.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he projects more as a linebacker than perhaps a defensive lineman.
Okay, wow, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's a new one for me. But I listened closely. I understand what you said. What about Harrison to the 3 technique and then Phil Harrison's position?
Why would you fuss with Snacks?
It ain't broke, Glenn.
He's the best in the league at what he does.
Glenn, it ain't broke.
Why?
Yeah, I think you're really digging deep here.
I'm going to give you a little crumb here. I'm going to move my needle a tad for you, Glenn. Because Jonathan Hankins averaged 48 snaps a game last season. So it's not 25 snaps we're talking about. It is 47 a game. I want to be accurate, even though my feeling is it is the least important of the four spots on the line. He did average 47 snaps a game, which came out to approximately 69% of the defensive snaps.
Okay.
So I want to be accurate with that. And if that gives you more cause for concern, I'm sorry, but I did want to be accurate. I still think it's not that hard or a lot easier to find a replacement. In fact, if you'll recall, at one point during the free agency period, when we talked about who would be easier to replace, Hankins or JPP, the reason we had talked initially about Hankins would be harder was because we thought there was more depth at defensive end with Okwara and Odighizuwa and Kerry Wynn, who's a restricted free agent, by the way.
I still stand by that.
And I still stand by that. So I want you to understand, we're realists on this. Nobody's happy that Jonathan Hankins has left. But don't picture it as a disaster, because there certainly are a bunch of defensive tackles who could give them 25 to 30 snaps as a rookie, and then maybe Thomas or Bromley can help fill in some of those gaps, and then the sub-package guy fills in the rest.
And Len, listen, I want to try to squeeze in a few more calls here, Len, before we have our guest.
Okay.
So certainly, thank you very much.
Thank you, Len.
You got it. Thanks so much for weighing in. And the other thing that can't be overlooked is, remember, when Hankins went down with the pectoral injury 2 seasons ago, the run defense took a significant hit. Now, with that being said, Snacks wasn't here. Vernon wasn't here.
Correct.
So you have to at least evaluate that. It's a little bit different. You lost Hankins when he was the main core of the defensive line. You saw what happened.
Again, he was being asked to play first or second fiddle.
Correct. Now you look at the loss of Hankins, but look at who's left over. It's much different than what the 2015 season was all about.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, something that at least needs to be entered into the conversation. All right, we got Don on the line in Texas. Don, what's happening?
Morning, guys.
Hi.
Morning to you, Don.
seems like a very tough call to follow after Lynn. It's a pretty tough shadow to follow right there, guys. But I got a bunch of things I'm going to touch up on, and then I'm going to take it off the air. P-Dot, I called you a couple weeks ago. You and Lance, you guys are awesome, about the draft particularly. I just want you guys to remember, I think you guys know this, last year not a single lineman was taken in the draft. Not a single lineman was taken in the draft. And P-Dot, I know you're huge on Njoku. This is where I'm going to agree to disagree with you.
Okay.
Njoku is an unbelievably – he's a freak athlete. I agree with you on that. Look at the tape. Every time he's about to hit contact, he jumps and he hurdles. That's scary to me. He does it over and over. There's a lot of consistency with the tape when he's about to hit contact.
His technique is raw because, quite frankly, at Miami, they didn't ask him to do a ton of the blocking. But you will see when you look at the tape that he does do enough of inline stuff to at least make you believe that he can do it because he shows effort. He clearly has the physical skills to do it, and he does show effort in doing it. Now, what's got to be polished up, and this is why O.J. Howard is a much better prospect, okay? O.J. Howard is the complete package. Njoku, still there's going to be a little projection there where you're going to have to say, okay, look, if we can clean this guy's technique up, how good a blocker is he going to be? And I think that I at least see desire, skill set, and effort, which makes me think that it's not that far of a projection to say he can do it.
And I agree with everything you said regarding his talent-wise. However, at 23, the value that we should address, and I'm just going to throw this out there, in the running game, the Giants were near the bottom of the league last year. They could not get any type of fluidity going. The only way to solve this is the ugly elephant in the room that has been there for a couple of years, again, that O-line. And I'm not going to name a player. I'm not going to do that because we don't know how the board's going to lay out. But at that point, if you're going to get the best possible offensive lineman to address this run game, you have the weapons. You just have to bring a different dimension like the running game. This offense mimics Green Bay's. Green Bay's is as good when the running game is going. And, again, I hate to name players, but offensive linemen, they got to address this. And I know they like diversity at O-line. If Forrest Lamp is there, this is not a discussion. You take Forrest Lamp at 23, Ramchek, if his physical health pans out. I'm not huge on Bowles. If not, take a D lineman in that first pick.
Well,
and
keep in mind,
take your ideas off the air, guys.
You got it done. And appreciate the phone call. I mean, I was just going to say, keep in mind, he's talking about Forrest Lamp. Forrest Lamp, who's projected to be a guard, and then look at who they've already brought in via free agency. So, I mean, I think what he was hinting at is maybe bring in some more competition at the tackle spot, but Forrest Lamp doesn't necessarily help you in that department.
Right. I think, you know, for me, and I have, look, you guys know me. I'm a trenches guy. I've been screaming about offensive linemen in the first round for the last 4 years. And by the way, 95% of the callers wanted to throw tomatoes at me. But I think they get the idea now. Here's the thing. The top guys from the top shelf of the offensive line drawer, specifically at tackle this year, we have addressed this a billion times. They're not blue chip plug and play players. They're just not. Okay? There are no Jonathan Ogdens in this draft. That's the problem. If the quality of the offensive tackle spot was so high that they were blue chip, lock, stock, and barrel plug and play guys, I would be with that call 1,000%, and you guys know it. And that's why I had such high hopes for Ramchick. You guys heard me talk about Ramchick about 4 months ago. I was like, he's the best left tackle coming out of this draft. But again, we have found out there are issues with him. He's not a blue chip, lock, stock, and barrel plug and play guy. There are none of them in this draft. Therefore, I'm looking at a guy like Taylor Moten, maybe in the second round. And I'm saying, okay, you know what? Want to add competition to the line? Let's draft Taylor Moten. That's fine. Move up if you have to get him. Fine. I just don't know that the value's there at 23 for the tackles in this draft.
Well, and value has to outweigh need. And here's the other thing. While many may say that this particular player is the best-rated offensive lineman, does not mean that the Giants feel that way. So there's a distinct difference between the two that everybody has to keep in mind. Well, with that being said, we're going to get to more phone calls, more tweets a little bit later on in the program, but we are going to stay on the draft topic, and our focus is now going to go towards the Pac-12 as we continue our preview of the upcoming NFL draft. And USC is today's focus. And we're now joined on the line by Kyle Bonagura, reporter for ESPN 710 in LA, also a Pac-12 football reporter for ESPN.com. Kyle, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's good. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with Adoree Jackson, who I think is by far the most intriguing prospect out of USC, the cornerback, 5'10". There's a lot of questions about whether or not his size is going to hurt him at the next level, Kyle. Where do you stand on that, and will he be more of a slot guy versus an outside guy at the next level?
Yeah, I think those concerns about his height are certainly warranted. You go back and you see some of the matchups he had against some of the bigger receivers in the Pac-12, and those are really when he struggled. If you go back and look at the Utah-USC ending from this past year, he got beat by a big 6'4 receiver that Utah had to lose the game. He tripped on the play as well, but those are the types of guys that he did struggle with. So I think those are valid concerns. He certainly has the athleticism, the kind of the leaping ability, the speed to kind of combat some of the issues that'll create. But as far as, you know, an elite cornerback prospect is concerned, Adoree is as good as there is out on the West Coast in the Pac-12.
Has the ankle injury in your mind hurt his draft stock at all?
I don't think so. I think it's everyone understands that it's fairly minor. I believe he ran like 4.39 at the combine. I think that he said after the Rose Bowl that if they were to play the next week, he would be ready. So any worries about the ankle injury are probably unwarranted at this point.
I had him down as a guy who could possibly not only return kicks, because we know he can do that, but also he'd be one of those guys who they might experiment with a little bit wide receiver. He's a terrific athlete.
Yeah, I think that's really what made him such a well-known prospect nationally this year, or well-known college football player nationally. It wasn't necessarily because he was for what he did as a corner, though obviously that drew a lot of interest as well. But it was the fact that he was a guy who did, you know, was able to contribute in all three phases during his career at USC. He didn't play as much receiver this year. I think he only had one catch. I think he took it something like 50 yards for a touchdown against Notre Dame. But last year as a sophomore, when USC was a little bit lighter at receiver, he actually was their second leading receiver in terms of total catches, and that was and that's still as a primarily a starting cornerback for the team last year. It would have been really interesting to see how he developed if he played offense as his first priority through his career, because I actually thought that his impact in the game was more noticeable when he had the ball in his hands than it was on defense. So he's certainly a guy who can help you out in the slot with some gadget-type stuff. But if a team really wanted to get creative and have him switch over, I'd certainly be intrigued to see how that would play out.
Yeah, and I've heard some recent interviews with Adoree Jackson. He's already hinted that in interviews with NFL teams, they've talked about if they bring him in, that they want to experiment, Paul, as you just alluded to, with respect to utilizing him at wide receiver. You mentioned that he's an attractive piece on special teams and wide receiver, but going back to his defensive play, Kyle, how is he in terms of stopping the run? Because whether you play in the slot or on the outside, you're going to have to at least chip in that department. Where does he stand on that front?
Yeah, I mean, you guys pointed out the size earlier. He's a little bit smaller, and that's obviously going to, you know, factor into his ability to stop the run in the NFL. I will say this. He's a willing tackler, right? So for a guy that size, he's willing to put his head down and sacrifice his body to make a stop on the outside. And really, that's, you know, for a guy with his skill set, that's really the best you can hope for. He's never going to be someone you're going to want to bring into the box and on third and short and help out in that regard. But certainly in the open field, he's going to be fine. It's not going to be a real concern, you know, for what you're getting from him. But I think that's basically all you can hope for.
Kyle, before you came on to our show, we were talking with somebody about the Giants' offensive line, and he was hoping the Giants would get somebody along that line in the draft. Now, USC has a couple of offensive line prospects. They've got some questions about them, no doubt about that. But could you discuss your thoughts about Chad Wheeler, the tackle, and Zach Banner, the guard? Now, Banner, I just saw on NFL Network the other day, said at one point he had been up to like 380 pounds, and now he's down to like 349, and is very proud of his weight loss and thinks that's going to be a big help for him when he gets into the NFL. So if you could share some of your comments about those two players.
Yeah, sure. I'll correct you real quick. So Banner's actually a tackle also. So Chad Wheeler was the left tackle for USC, and Banner played right tackle.
Banner's going to be a guard, though, in this league, don't you think?
I honestly haven't paid. I haven't seen what the scouts are saying about him now, but he didn't play one snap at guard.
Because
at
of his
USC
size, though, and his lack of footwork. That's what I see. But okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it certainly. I mean, that certainly could happen. I think he's, he was an elite offensive line prospect in the Pac-12. So I think the concern about him at tackle was his foot speed. So it probably would work out for him. You could certainly see the move inside because it could limit his ability to play tackle in the NFL. So I mean, that's new for me. And like you said, he did have some weight loss issues that he had to struggle with, and that was partially why he decided to put the NFL off for a year and decide to address that this past offseason. And he did a really good job staying down, keeping his weight down this year. Chad Wheeler, for me, is actually a better offensive line prospect. He doesn't necessarily get all the praise and accolades that Banner gets, but for me, I think that's more of just his personality, and Banner was much more outgoing, so people noticed him more. He was able to stay, kind of garner some more headlines from that. The other one is actually Damian Mama, left early. He's an offensive guard. Like Banner, had some weight issues as well. Came in at USC around 400 pounds, played at around 325 this year. Thought he probably would have benefited from another year coming back to USC and insuring things up a bit, but he's certainly a guy who could be a late-round option as well.
Wheeler, I noticed, Kyle, has had the injury bug that he's had to deal with during the course of his career. I noticed it even goes back to perhaps a little bit in spring practices in 2013. Knee injury, I believe, as a senior in high school, shoulder surgery. How much is that a concern as he moves to the NFL?
Yeah, like anyone who's had prolonged injury concerns, I think you have to be cognizant of it, and especially when it's not just one thing, right? If any time a player's had multiple injuries over a long period of time, you have to worry. It certainly raises durability concerns. At the end of the year, he was definitely USC's best offensive lineman, and if he's able to kind of put those injury issues behind him, I think he can develop into a good prospect. Now, I still don't think he's a top of the draft type guy. Maybe a third, fourth round pick would be about right for him. And certainly anyone really with those injury issues would be concerned. Banner's the same way. He had to miss his first full year on campus because of some injuries as well. So that's certainly something to be cognizant of. It always is.
I want to ask you about the other side of the line for a second because you got a guy named Stevie T, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, but what I do know is he's a legitimate third-day prospect. I'm seeing the listing at 6'1", 331, and please, by all means, how about a thumbnail on him?
Stevie Tui Kolovatsu.
Exactly. Really, bless you.
Really interesting story. Yeah, so he started his career at Utah. When he served on a Mormon mission, so he's actually going to be 26 by the time the season rolls around, for some context into the type of prospect he is. At Utah, he really didn't make that much of an impact. He actually never really even started for the Utes, was a rotational player and did a good job when he was in there, but they've always had very good linemen there and just wasn't able to break through for whatever reason. And once he graduated from Utah, he decided he needed to find a better location to develop in his final year, and it turned out to work out really well for him and USC. From day one, he was plugged into that nose tackle spot in Clancy Pendergast's defense and was without a doubt the most impactful player on that defense, and that's including Adoree Jackson. What Stevie did, kind of gobbling up blockers and frying up linebackers to make tackles, was invaluable in that defense. Rose Bowl MVP. Really, as the season went along, just got stronger. Kind of a slow center of gravity. I believe he's around 6'6", 6'1", maybe around 330 pounds. I really like Stevie on a personal level. I thought he was a really good kid to deal with. From a media standpoint, the coaches raved about him, players raved about him. Athleticism, maybe a little bit of a concern at the next level, but for a defensive tackle, I think he has all the adequate attributes you'd look for in a guy who can step in and probably help you right away. And the fact that he did come, he did transfer from Utah and picked up the steam right away, I think that's got to be a valuable attribute that NFL coaches and GMs will appreciate, because it certainly lends to the idea that he could do the same thing in the NFL.
His uncle played for the Jets, Sinoy Pua, and I think the interesting part here, Lance, the one big thing that I liked about him, what does that say?
Power.
That's the one word that just stuck out like a sore thumb. He plays with power.
Oh, he does, for sure. He you know, you watch him knock these guards and centers back week after week, and it's pretty obvious that if he wasn't the strongest guy on the field, he was damn near close.
Yeah.
Talking with Kyle Bonagura, reporter for ESPN 710 in L.A., also Pac-12 football reporter for ESPN.com. And Kyle, you brought up his age, and I'm glad you did that because we were focusing on Utah's prospects on a previous show, and you're familiar with the Pac-12, so Garrett Bowles comes to mind too, their tackle. He's up there in age. He actually went on a mission just like what we're talking about with the defensive tackle for USC, and I think, you know, I get a lot of questions from fans. They get nervous when you throw out a 25 or a 26-year-old, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem as if just because they're up there in age, they don't have nearly as much wear and tear on their bodies if they've been removed from football because of the mission work.
Right, it kind of spreads it out, right? It gives you a couple of years to play, a couple of years to recover, depending on when you're mapping out your mission. But I have really no problem. If it's a guy like a quarterback, right, and you have like a 26-year-old quarterback, you're like, okay, maybe that doesn't intrigue. It's not as intriguing. But for a guy like a defensive tackle, if you get 6-7 years out of a defensive tackle, I mean, you're in the prime of your career at 25. So I would look at it as a positive more than a negative. You know, Juju Smith, the opposite receiver, he's 20 years old, so he's really got some time to kind of grow as well. So there's a couple of different ways to look at how you want to perceive age in this case. But I think for Stevie, it certainly should be a bonus because, you know, if it's the mid-round guy, you're going to want him to ideally play as fast as possible. You don't want to spend time developing a guy if you get him in the third, fourth round, whatever it might be. Stevie might be a little bit lower than that, but, you know, you guys get what I'm saying.
Absolutely, and you brought up Juju Smith-Schuster just now, and let's focus on him because USC does have a few wide receivers. I've seen comparisons to Anquan Boldin with respect to him. Doesn't have blazing speed, but if you want that 50-50 ball, Kyle, he's the type of guy that's extremely reliable, and he's very good after the catch. How much of a comparison to Anquan Boldin is perhaps fair when you evaluate the game of Juju Smith-Schuster?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, he certainly has the similar body, similar attributes. He's not going to be go run 50 yards down the sideline and outrun a speedy cornerback in the NFL. But certainly, you can run him on stuff across the middle. He's going to go up. He's going to make plays. He runs all the routes very well. He's pretty good hands. His production is kind of interesting to look at, right? Because his sophomore year, he was a junior this past year, he had a broken hand for the second half of the year. He had surgery, had a pin inserted into his hand, didn't miss a game. You don't have to worry about toughness with him at all. He's a really good blocker. And that said, he's been one of the most productive pass catchers in the country over the past 3 years. I really like Juju. I'm really surprised that he hasn't been looked at as a surefire first-round guy. I mean, not now I understand where they're coming from, but, like, when I saw him early in his career, I thought, you know, this guy has first receiver in the draft potential written all over him. And I think the fact that the receptions were kind of distributed a little bit more at USC this year hurt the perception of him. He's had some injury stuff, too, that he's been dealing with. He was always getting treatment after practice this past season, and there's a bunch of nagging-type stuff, nothing really major to be concerned about, but the fact that there was small things coming up week after week hurt his film, to be quite frank. So I think that if a team drafts Juju Smith, if a team's able to get Juju Smith in the second round, I'd be thrilled for that team because they have a really, really talented player.
I know you're the Pac-12 columnist out there for ESPN in Los Angeles. So let me ask you this, Kyle, if I can. Go to UCLA for just a second because we kind of exhausted the USC prospects. McKinley, in some people's minds, sneaks into the bottom of the first round. Other people think he goes early second round. From what you've been hearing about him, this guy's an impact linebacker. What are your thoughts as to where he might be?
I'm sorry, I missed the name there.
McKinley from UCLA.
Oh, Tack McKinley. Yeah, I thought you said Kinley. Anyways, McKinley, I'm a big fan of McKinley as well. I spent a lot of time over at UCLA, and the speed and athleticism is really amazing. The story I like to tell about Tack is that when he was either a junior or senior in high school, he ran something like a 10.5 900 meter in the California state track meet, which was second best in the state of California, which is, you know, obviously pretty impressive for a guy who's going to be a defensive end outside linebacker type prospect. That time would have actually like beat a few people at the Olympics this past year. So we're talking about an elite athlete who was, for my money, the best pass rusher in the Pac-12. Solomon Thomas is right there too, but McKinley was banged up, and that kind of contributed to some of his early season. He was kind of on the sideline for a bunch of the season early on with some injury stuff. I really like Tack. I think he's a first-round pick. I think if a team gets him in the first round, it'll be a pick well spent.
Well, given the fact that you've covered the Pac-12, and we usually ask this to even some of the other reporters who cover schools because, you know, they obviously see a lot of the premier athletes within the conference, is there a can't-miss prospect to you in the Pac-12 that a team should grab regardless of what round, no matter what school we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, Thomas is a guy that a lot of people are high on now. I'm a big Christian McCaffrey guy. I think he's going to help the team right away. Man, can't miss is tough because there's as I'm running down all the names in my head. I think Thomas, certainly there. McKinley.
How about anybody out of Washington?
Well, the one name that pops up always is John Ross. I'm not as big on John Ross. I think that, you know, the 40 time is obviously impressive. He was a very, very good player this past year. But if we're picking between John Ross and Juju Smith-Schuster, I think that I might lean towards Juju just because of his, you know, everyone's fast in the NFL, right? So he's not going to be running away from corners in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Against Alabama in the playoff, when they got physical with John Ross, it kind of limited what he was able to do. That was a little bit concerning for me. I wouldn't have those same concerns with Juju. So for me, John Ross is a little bit overhyped right now. I think people reading too much into the 40 time. But if we go back to the original question, I think Tack McKinley is probably the guy that I would take over everyone else in the conference right now.
Kyle, last one for me, just going back to USC. I know we covered pretty much the main prospects. The one guy that jumps out to me only because there's so much depth at this position, and I know he's somewhat of a raw guy. He transferred from Oklahoma before he came to USC, is Taylor McNamara at the tight end position. Doesn't jump out as a blocker, but what have you seen out of him in terms of what he could perhaps do and what's his best role in the NFL?
I wouldn't waste a pick. I wouldn't waste a roster, a 90-man roster spot on him.
Really?
He just really never made an impact for me. Yeah, there was two other tight ends at USC this past year. One was a sophomore, one was a freshman that I thought were much more valuable. So I would move on from him and not spend much time trying to figure out where he would factor in, because I don't imagine he'll stick on a 53 at any point.
Interesting. Okay. Just out of curiosity, wanted to get your thoughts. I know that's a deep position, and there's going to be a lot of tight ends that are going to go even in the late rounds. So that's why whenever we see one, certainly wanted to ask. But, Kyle, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, guys.
All right. There is Kyle Monagora, reporter for ESPN 710 in L.A., Pac-12 football reporter for ESPN.com. The latest in terms of USC and his thoughts overall on the Pac-12.
See, now, McKinley was like part-time player at UCLA because he was banged up so much. But usually when people talk about the linebackers who are going to be in that late first round, they're talking about Riddick, they're talking about Cunningham as guys who the Giants may want to think about or sniff on, you know, when they get to 23. But, you know, depending upon how you feel about McKinley, maybe he injects himself into that conversation late in that first round. Maybe a little lower. Maybe that's still a little high for him. But obviously, he's a big fan.
Yeah, he's very high on him. And interesting that he was talking about John Ross, the receiver at Washington, and he likes Juju Smith-Schuster a lot more than even John Ross. And everybody is overwhelmed with the speed factor, of course.
I'm not a big John Ross guy either, to be honest with you. I get the fact that he's the Flash. Okay, great.
But you have to do other things. I mean, that's the key.
And how well is he going to take the pounding in the NFL?
That's a fair question.
You know, look, I remember, I was around when Stephen Baker was here for the Giants. And Stephen was a very productive player in a limited role, did some really great things. Obviously, the big catch in the Super Bowl against the Bills. I understand all of that. But in terms of length of career at the top of his game, that was a very short lifespan for a guy who was actually bigger than Ross is. I'm very skeptical of those guys, especially with the way the defensive backs are today. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster than they ever have been before, and they will drop a lick on you in a hurry. And they will play bump and run jam coverage at the line of scrimmage, and they'll make it so you can't get a quick release.
Can't use your blazing speed.
And then what good is it?
Yeah. Well, that's why Smith-Schuster, when I threw out the Anquan Boldin comparison,
he attacks the ball.
Correct. He's very aggressive, and he's also very good after
absolutely
the catch. And that is a little bit more attractive than maybe a guy that could just run down the field vertically and doesn't have nearly as much versatility. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to reopen up the phone lines for those of you who want to weigh in on Jonathan Hankins, who's going to fill that void, as well as the draft. We've got Dino on the line in Jersey. Dino, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Dino.
I spoke to you guys last week. I just wanted to go over a couple things about the draft.
Sure.
Actually, you guys just talked to the USC reporter, and I wanted to talk about one of the players over there. I was doing some study on the offensive linemen that are coming out this year in the draft, and reading up on a couple of them and stuff like that, what people's opinions were and stuff like that. And not a lot of people – there's a couple of people that are really not sold on Ramczyk. I mean, there was one or two people I read that they don't know what all the hype is about him, and they said that he's really not that good if you really watch his tape. And they're projecting him to be a bust like that guy from the Eagles, I guess one of the linemen, David, whatever. I forget his name was. Maybe you guys know.
I'm not sure what you're going to say, but here's what I will say, and I'll repeat myself for about the 5,000th time, and I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but these top-shelf tackles in this draft are not blue-chip, across-the-board, plug-and-play guys. They all have some questions on them. They have all received mixed reviews. I was at the Combine. Okay, I heard a lot of these mixed reviews. Things about Ramczyk, you got to worry about the medical with the hip. You got to worry about him building up his power because he's going to need to do that. You also have only 1 year of experience at Wisconsin because he played at lower level programs, which means he's going to have to get a lot of technique down in a hurry if he's going to be playing week one of the 2017 season. So you're right. There are absolutely questions. This is not Jonathan Ogden. This is not Anthony Munoz we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, my point being is I wouldn't want to take none of these linemen and risk on a first-round pick. So my point is now going back to this USC player that the lineman I would go for,
yeah,
and I want to see your guys' take on him, is maybe take him in the third round. I mean, you know, it can be high risk, whatever, or low, big reward. The guy, Zach Banner, I mean,
we talked about him just now.
Massive man.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's 6'9", 350, or whatever he is. And I don't know if they're projecting either right guard or right tackle. I would take a shot on him maybe in the third round or something like that in the later round. And you put him next to, like, a Fluker, those two big bodies, I mean, to run behind. I mean, I would be able to run, I think, maybe 10 yards behind those two massive
well,
guys.
Well, to your point, Dino, Banner is a very good run blocker. It's the pass protection that I think is a concern for any NFL executive and so
forth. General athleticism.
Correct.
It's a little difficult with the frame and the boxcar type body he carries.
Well, you know what? The best comparison that I could go to is we talked about when Larry Donnell joined the Giants, and Larry had experience as a quarterback. So
yes,
he was not only moving to a new position, but he was basically thinking differently than what he was normally doing on the football field. The issue that they always talked about, and Ben McAdoo spoke about this, is getting pad level for Larry Donnell,
mm-hmm,
being in a position because he's a tall guy. So with Banner, it's very similar, Dino. He has immense size, but if you're 6'8", you're not going to be straight up when you're blocking. You got to get in a position to run block. So the concern is, can he get in that position and stay there moving forward? I agree with you. I mean, I think that if the value matches up with where you're selecting him and he's still there, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking a chance on him because of his ability to run block, but I wouldn't necessarily reach just because he looks so massive on paper. And just to tell you, he's played every game at right tackle in 2014. 2015, he played 12 games at right tackle and then two at left tackle, and this past season he was solely at right tackle. So he's been mainly a tackle. Hasn't even played guard at the collegiate level.
No. I will tell you this, Larry. I wrote down positives. I like his frame, his power, and his push off the line. My questions, his athleticism. I wrote down he's a little too bulky, and obviously that's the weight issue. Balance, I had questions about his balance. I had questions about his technique, and I had questions about his ability to sustain blocks. Now, again, if you sculpt him and you mature him and you coach him, you could probably improve a lot of those things. How much of it? How quickly? To me, he comes in and he competes as a reserve, probably a tackle. Remember, he is 6'8", and to be a guard, even though he's got a better body type for a guard, the 6'8" kind of makes it difficult for him to be a guard.
Well, that's the other challenge that you need to take into consideration. Plus, he never played guard, too.
No, I know.
Even if you're projecting a guy to be a guard, it's a little scary to think that he's never lined up at guard in college. So, I mean, I don't think it's a no-brainer that he automatically can make the transition. And we always talk about that, a guy at left tackle moving to guard. You have to see what you get out of him in training camp before you all of a sudden assume that.
What do you think about this other guy? He's a guard, actually. I forget what school he's from. Damian Mama.
He's also at USC. Yeah, he's there. Yeah, USC, he's the guard. Yeah. He played
right.
Left guard and right guard, Dino, in 2014. 2015, started 13 of the 14 games at left guard. And then this past season, he started 12 of the 13 games at left guard. So he's mainly been a left guard. I don't think playing on the right side would be a problem. You know, we just heard from Kyle, and Kyle seemed to insinuate while Wheeler may be their best offensive lineman, Mom has been their most consistent guy going back to when he came out of high school.
The injury bug with Wheeler.
I agree with you. Wheeler is the durability question.
I'll give you a good guy who's played some right tackle, right guard, and left guard. So he's got some versatility. He's not going to help you out at left tackle at all, but he could help you out in a lot of other positions on the line. Eric Magnuson from Michigan. Okay, he to me would be a really good value on the third day, fourth or fifth round, and I liked a lot about him, his athleticism, his feet. He was a smart player. He was more of an impeder than he was a road grader, but again, his versatility, 6'4", 303 pounds. If you're looking for a name in the third day, I think Eric Magnuson of Michigan would probably be good value.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to get your input on. For the first round pick, last week I spoke to you guys about obviously O.J. Howard and stuff. Now, a different scenario. Say he went top 10 and he was off the board top 10, so forget about O.J. Howard. And there's another player on the defensive side that I'm really high on, and he was projected like top 5, top 10. But now a lot of people's boards are saying that he's going to slip probably maybe to the teens somewhere. Maybe mid-teens, who knows. But I would definitely reach for him because he's
Dino, you mentioned defense, but you didn't name a player. So who are you referring to?
I'm going to say his name, Reuben Foster.
Oh, okay. There was a huge buildup to that. I was waiting for
him. You see him falling? Foster dropping to 23?
No. I'm saying I don't think he's going to drop.
No, he won't.
Yeah, he won't. He will not. Yeah.
No. I'm saying a lot of people's boards saying that he might slip into the, early teens or mid-teens.
But if he does that doesn't impact the Giants at 23.
I think I know where he's getting at. You're getting at the fact that I still think there's a good chance the Giants could trade up into the teens if they see somebody they really, really want.
Would you reach and trade up for a player of his caliber? The guy has a motor on him. He loves the game of football. I mean, he's played with a broken arm or whatever. And when he hits you, you're going to remember his name. I haven't seen a guy hit like he has. Maybe, coming out. Maybe I mean.
There's only one question.
But LT.
There's only one question about him, and it's an important question in the NFL. What about his coverage skills? We don't know. We don't know his coverage skills. Now, if you could,
not that bad from what people are saying.
But we don't know.
As a run stuffer, I mean,
incredible. I'm with you. But the coverage skills are going to be a projection because Alabama did not ask him to do a whole lot of that.
Well, and Dino, here's why I wouldn't do it. and it goes back to, I'm looking big picture. I'm not just looking at the individual player. This defense is pretty much set with its starting core. Other than defensive tackle, they have their playmakers. I would not reach for a player on defense if I know that mainly that defensive player is going to provide my depth this coming season.
I'll give you a better argument.
I'm saying that is because Casillas, Kennard, and Robinson are going to be
But I'll give you I'm not going to tell you they can't draft a linebacker, but how about this? They may not have to give up anything to either get Riddick or Cunningham at 23. Instead of trading, Cunningham could be around at 23, though. Yeah, he could be there. So Riddick could be there. Cunningham could be there. McKinley certainly could be there. And how much you're going to have to give up to get maybe to 15, if you think Foster's there at 15, you may have to pay a king's ransom to go get him.
I think you're moving up to get an extreme luxury that is...
Well, they're comparing him to Luke Kuechly. I mean, this is comparing...
Whoa, wait! Luke Kuechly's got great coverage skills. Yeah. We don't know that about Foster.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he's going to be coming out and saying he's going to be a Luke Kuechly, but, you know, just flashes and stuff, they're comparing him to, you know, maybe a Luke Kuechly type player. But we don't know exactly about the coverage skills, but some people have written that his coverage skills haven't been that bad, but they could be better.
They think that that's something maybe he could help out and help himself out with. I understand that, but, you know... First round pick.
Keep him in as a run stopper, and then keep Robinson as the cover linebacker. He's our best cover linebacker.
Well, but here's the other thing, Dito. Let's not forget this though, and this is something you can't overlook when you're evaluating the linebackers. How many times did the Giants have three linebackers on the field? And for how
not
many
much.
Downs? Well, there you
not
go.
Much.
So don't you have to take that into consideration? If you're going to line up two linebackers more often than not, and you're going to go with the extra defensive back, and Robinson is appealing because of his coverage skill set against tight ends, if you have to take Foster off the field, and I get it, you're looking down the road, which is good. You have to do that a year early with the draft. I'm just still going back to the importance of the linebacker overall in the NFL. Coverage guys are much more important than the guys that only play first and second down, similar to like we were talking about with Hankins. If you take a guy off the field for passing downs, you have to think about, does the value match up where you're taking that guy
and
how much money you're
paying? And that's actually the same question people have about Riddick. They're not sure right now about his coverage skills because he wasn't asked to do a lot of that in college. And really, if you're going to draft a first-round linebacker, doesn't he have to be a blue chipper, or you're pretty darn confident he's a three-down player?
Well, Riddick is going to be more of like a Von Miller type of just edge rusher. That's what I think. He's going to be used more like a Von Miller.
Certainly could be.
Well, in that tweener type of situation, too, in terms of whether they move him down a little bit on the defensive line. And
he's not a true linebacker. I don't think he's a true linebacker. He's more of a edge rusher.
I agree with you. And I think it depends on the format of the defense and where they see him fit. And Dino, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in on the conversation. You got it. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We'll certainly get to more phone calls the rest of the week as we continue to preview the draft. And so far, I'm just taking a quick glance at Twitter before we wrap things up to see if anybody has another question that relates to what we were discussing. And
tomorrow,
so far,
by the way, we'll have a preview of the Florida Gators.
I thought we're doing Tennessee tomorrow.
Are we doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you telling me so? Because I was lining up Tennessee.
Oh, then we're doing Tennessee tomorrow. I guess I'm having a little brain lock
here.
All
right, we'll work out the kinks off the air. How about that?
You got Tennessee? We're
good.
Tennessee, then we're doing the Tennessee Volunteers tomorrow. I promise you that.
We have your permission to
did
do
we
Tennessee.
Did we do Florida already? We might
yes,
have done
you Florida. Did
Florida
last
we did
week.
Florida last
yes,
week.
Florida last week. I was like, whew, I had to breathe easy here. I'm like, all right.
No problem.
With that being said, maybe we'll get to some tweets off the air before we do anything else on this program.
Enjoy.
Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks for all the calls and the tweets. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.